For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel, on our Facebook feed, and on our Twitter feed, we say good morning, universe. A happy Thanksgiving to all those who are Canadian and celebrating this weekend. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Minuk in the top right, Ezra Ginsberg in the middle. I am your host, Drew Mandel. We're here with you to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, to talk about the end, the merciful end, I should add, of the preseason for the Jets, and for about the upcoming 2021-22 NHL season. The Jets into Anaheim on Wednesday to kick off what should be a tremendously entertaining and hopefully, quote-unquote, normal season for the Winnipeg Jets and for the entire NHL. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. How are things with you both?
Yeah, I think things are going well. It's kind of weird, guys. I was trying to think the last time that we had the Jets playing the same team, you know, three times in the first six games. I think it's been a long time, and especially a team that's not in their division. So it's kind of a bit of a weird start to the season with the Jets playing the Ducks this many times. Kind of reminds you of back in 2015, right, when the Jets and Ducks played in the first round. But yeah, things are good. As you mentioned, Drew, Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. And, you know, when you've got a Bombers game and a Jets game in the same day, it's always good. And you've got, you know, the NFL going on, lots of sports happening. So it's a great time of the year. And, you know, it's always fun to give our predictions. We're going to do those a little bit later. I think I know who I'm taking to win the Stanley Cup. And obviously, you know, you can just throw that right in the toilet because I'm never right.
Exactly. In that case, I know who I'm not taking. Once you declare who you're taking, I know who I'm not taking to win the Stanley Cup. It's it works quite well that way. Mr. Minuk, nice to see you on this Saturday morning.
Thanks, Drew. Yeah, no, good to be here. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking earlier in the week how it'll be kind of an adjustment for the Jets to suddenly all the other American teams are playing each other and getting that experience playing against other teams that will be within their division. And the Jets are playing these Canadian teams. So to that end, it'll be, you know, you went an entire season without playing anyone else. And now you've gone the exhibition season without playing anyone else. So it really is going to be kind of an interesting, you know, reintroduction for Winnipeg when they go out to California this week or next week, I should say, and you know, see those U.S. teams. So that'll be an interesting adjustment. I'm curious to see how they handle that because, like I said, it's been so long since they last played. I think what was it, March of 2020 when they last played an American team. So yeah, it's been some time since we've seen that, and that'll be an interesting adjustment for them for sure.
It certainly will be. Just when we try to kill the Canadian division, the exhibition season brings it right back. But mercifully, the Jets losing last night in Calgary, I think it was 3-1, if I'm not mistaken. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong, because I was certainly not paying that much attention to it, given it's the final of the preseason games that are just so unnecessary. It was funny. I saw a tweet earlier in the week from Ken Campbell. Ken used to be with the Hockey News. He's been around the NHL for close to three decades at this point in time, if not longer. And he says, you know, his proudest moment, or one of his proudest moments, is that he watches absolutely none of the preseason because he knows that it doesn't even matter a lick. And it's always it's always interesting to see somebody come with the unvarnished truth when it comes to the preseason, because more often than not, and especially this year, I think for the Winnipeg Jets, most of the roster spots were claimed, most of the jobs were claimed. There was some fighting for, you know, things on the bottom of the roster, no question, but those have now been resolved, and we're going to find out the Winnipeg Jets roster come Wednesday night when they head into Anaheim. Obviously, no Mark Scheifele for the first of that game, as he continues to serve his suspension from the playoff incident last year against the Montreal Canadiens. You know, am I the only one who thinks that it's going to be Cole Perfetti who goes up the middle in that first game? Just, it might only be a one game audition, but wouldn't it be kind of fun to see Perfetti up the middle there just to replace Scheifele for that one game?
But Paul Maurice was asked, and he essentially said that's probably not happening.
Oh, okay. Well, then that shows what I know. I know as much as his Stanley Cup predictions, clearly, but you know, obviously the Jets roster will be a little bit skewed for that first game, to your point there, Dave. But it'll be you know, it'll be a one game of 82, and the Jets certainly have a soft schedule to start the season. You mentioned, Dave, that and Ezzy, that you faced the Anaheim Ducks three times in the first few games, and the Ducks aren't expected to be a playoff team. They shouldn't, you know, they seem like they're in the midst of a rebuild. You have
they'll
a
be San one Jose of the worst teams in the Pacific.
Right. You have the San Jose Sharks team. Again, another team that's not expected to be a playoff contender or playoff, certainly not a juggernaut. Maybe they keep it close, but they're not expected to be great. So the Jets, you know, to start this 2021-22 season, have plenty of opportunity to get off on a good start, to get going. You know, they come back, and obviously they have the game against the Wild, which is an interdivision game. And then they have a Predators team for the home opener, but the Predators themselves, you know, aren't expected to be tremendous in the Central Division this year. So opportunity knocks, I would say, for the Winnipeg Jets throughout the first games here in the month of October.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned the games against Minnesota and Nashville. So you've got a few games in the Central to start the season off. But yeah, you've got 6 of 8 to start on the road, and then you've got that 7-game homestand in November. But you see that oftentimes, guys, you know, in the course of a season, you know, you're going to have some road trips, and you're going to have some, you know, longer homestands. Sometimes it happens at the beginning of the season. But, you know, to your point about Cole Perfetti, Drew, I mean, he obviously, you know, played last night in the 3-1 loss to Calgary. I mean, I think it would be probably more likely that he plays on the wing for that first game against Anaheim. I mean, I think there is a good chance he is going to make the opening night roster. In terms of, you know, where he's going to spend the majority of the season, that remains to be seen. He could obviously play some serious minutes, you know, on the Moose, you know, presumably on that first line. But, you know, based on, you know, the amount of games he's played in the preseason and the way he's looked, guys, like just those simple, like the simple types of plays that he makes, just, you know, those small area plays where he just kind of gets himself out of trouble. He clearly, you know, knows, you know, how to, you know, create space for himself. And he obviously has, you know, just as much skill as most players in the NHL. And when you consider that he's only 19 years old, you know, the sky's the limit. But yeah, it's possible that he makes the roster. And, you know, to your point, Drew, about that fourth line, I mean, you had Jansen Harkins, you know, playing up with Mark Scheifele and, you had him playing up with, who is it? It was Scheifele and Connor, right? Is that who he was with? Or he was up on that line, right? Jansen Harkins, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yesterday. So, I mean, you had him up playing on the top line, being rewarded for having a real good preseason. If I had to, you know, project where he's going to end up, it'll probably be on that fourth line, you know, maybe on the third line. But I think he's definitely made the team. Riley Nash has definitely made the team. And, you know, I'd say Evgeny Svechnikov has the inside track, but you watch Dominic Toninato, guys, and I think he's made this Jets roster as well as one of the top 13 forwards. So yeah, over the last couple preseason games, I agree, Drew, the roster has started to crystallize a little bit. There's a good word for you. So I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens here in the beginning part of the season with the line combinations. Because I think, you know, we all expect guys like you saw yesterday, Dubois, Ehlers, and Kopp, and I think we expect that to be the second line, at least to start the season.
Well, they've been together all preseason, so there's no reason right to think at this point in time that anything's going to change, and they've showed well together. I saw somebody in the comments asking about Nikolai Ehlers and his health status. Paul Maurice said he's going to be fine, that, you know, it was just precautionary that they held him out of the third period in last night's game, so, you know, take it for what it's worth at this point in time. But there'd be, as we sit here on Saturday morning, there's no expectation that Nikolai Ehlers won't be in the lineup and won't be healthy for the season opener come Wednesday night. It would be a surprise at this point in time. The Jets seem to, you know, with the exception of Dylan Samberg, seem to have escaped training camp relatively unscathed. There were a couple times where guys were held out of periods or whatever because of, you know, utmost, the line that was overused during the heyday of COVID, utmost precautions or something out of something like that, something pretty close to that.
Mm-hmm. Precautionary.
Yeah. But that was the same sort of idea that the Jets were adopting, of course, when it came to preseason. Not like Alex Ovechkin leaving last night's game against the Washington Capitals, where it certainly looked like it could have been, it might be a little bit more serious than anything the Jets went through. Yes, there it is. Thank you, Matthew Thompson, out of an abundance of caution. There you go. Appreciate that. I knew somebody in the chat would be able to, and there's Ekran Global also saying the same thing. I always appreciate the chat coming to my rescue on this Saturday morning here. Nicole also saying the same thing. Very good. Everybody in the chat, you know, Drew, gets a thumbs up to start this morning's show.
You know, absolutely. And, you know, sticking with Alex Ovechkin, do you guys know how many games Ovechkin has missed because of injury in his entire career?
Probably no more than a handful.
Injury, not just. Yeah, 24.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible.
He's missed something like 48 games, but that is because of, you know, contracts, or remember he was suspended for a COVID violation. But games missed directly due to injury, 24. I mean, you're talking about a guy who entered the league in 2005, 2006. This is his, I guess this would be his 16th year in the NHL. Like, the fact that he's only missed 24 total games is kind of absurd.
He's missed more games due to work stoppages than he has injury. That's certainly the case in the course of his career. It is incredible. And Alex Ovechkin, of course, as he gets closer and closer to Wayne Gretzky's record, will be a topic of conversation this year, next year, years to come, of course. But, you know, going back to the Jets, I wanted to ask you guys about your thoughts. We haven't really talked about it this preseason much. The changes, the minor changes, not big tweaks, but a minor tweak to the Jets power play, the first power play unit and the second power play unit, with Pierre-Luc Dubois sort of taking over that Paul Stastny role on the Jets' number one power play, and Stastny then playing a bigger role on the second power play unit. Your thoughts on that? Your thoughts? I mean, it just seems like the Jets are doing everything in their power to make Pierre-Luc Dubois as comfortable and impactful as he can be. And, you know, for what it's worth, in the preseason, he certainly was noticeable, oftentimes more noticeable than he was during any regular season game last season.
Yeah, I like, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois' preseason. I think, you know, especially, you know, as the games, you know, as we got into the fourth, fifth, sixth games. And, you know, it's a little bit surprising because we know that, you know, Paul Maurice likes to keep his forward lines together, right? So if you're talking Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler, oftentimes you'll see those three together. Or, you know, if it's Ehlers, Dubois, let's use like Stastny from last year. Obviously, you know, Stastny looks like he's going to be more of a staple of that third line. So it's a little bit surprising in that sense, but not surprising, Drew, because you just nailed it on the head. I mean, they're trying to get Dubois going offensively this year, right? Most likely, you know, he is going to center the first line with Scheifele out for game one. And then we expect that second line, as we talked about earlier, to be Dubois, Ehlers, and Kopp. And obviously, you know, you could see Stastny on that line at some points. I mean, you could see, you know, some different players on that line, but certainly Dubois and Ehlers, unless Ehlers plays a significant amount of time on the top line with Scheifele and Connor, you expect Dubois and Ehlers to be a pair. But what I really like about Dubois, which is something that clearly he worked on and is a focus of his, is that he's got to go to the net. He knows that he's got to be more aggressive. I mean, he's a big man. Like, he is a big man by NHL standards. And what I liked yesterday is that he was, you know, moving to the net, you know, using his big frame, you know, tipping pucks, things like that. So I think he's going to be effective in the role. And it goes back to what we've talked about, you know, for the last several years. The Jets have so many players, centers playing wing, wingers playing, you know, center, you know, guys that can really be interchangeable on those top two power play units, right? So you can have a guy like Andrew Kopp on your first unit. You can have him on your second unit. Sometimes, because the Jets are so talented, he doesn't even factor in on either power play, right? So I think Dubois is another one of those guys. And, you know, same thing goes with, you know, the point man on the power play, right? Like, we expect it to be Neil Pionk, but a guy like Nate Schmidt can easily step into that role, and so could Josh Morrissey. So, you know, watching the broadcast yesterday, what we expect to be, for the most part, what we expect the Jets lineup to look like on Wednesday night against Anaheim. And the power play, to me, is kind of one of the, you know, things I'm the least concerned about on this team. I think the power play is going to be even better this year.
Yeah, it finished seventh in the NHL last year, if I'm not mistaken, Dave. And I mean, there's no reason why it shouldn't be an effective and dynamic power play again. A top one, you know, in the NHL, or at least in the top 10 in the NHL, with the amount of offensive talent that you have on it. And, you know, Dubois, you know, you park Pierre-Luc Dubois in front of the net, he's going to be a handful to handle for any defenseman in the league. He's going to open up shooting lanes for some of the other guys, you know, on this power play. You know, pick your poison again, very much for the Winnipeg Jets power play, and Pierre-Luc Dubois should be an effective and active member of it, never mind a second power play unit that should also be effective, you know, led by, of course, Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yeah, and I think what people need to be cautious about is getting too worked up over what's happening during preseason games. Sure. I mean, you've got the guys who are the young guns. If you looked at the advanced stats from last night's game, obviously just a one game in isolation, but the guys who are the bubble guys, they're giving it. The NHL guys weren't. Most of their numbers were fairly unimpressive, and that's mostly because, like we've talked about it throughout the course of the preseason, you're not trying to win a job. You're just trying to stay healthy and get your rhythm back. So, I mean, people reading so much into these preseason games as if they have any meaning, they don't. They really don't. I know that people say you can't just turn it on, but the truth is everybody knows that that's the guys aren't, they're not going 100%.
They're nobody's at half speed.
Yeah, nobody's. So I mean, the power play not clicking yesterday, the penalty kill giving up two goals, it's not something to lose your mind over, to get worked up over. And that's why I said last week in the show that, the focus is really on what's happening at the training camps that people aren't watching, unless they're actually going to the Iceplex. But the truth is that's when the guys are working on their game and they're working on their, chemistry with the other, with their lines. So that's where you should be, drawing some sort of levels of, conclusion, not necessarily from a preseason game where, you've got, your A squad, they've got their B squad, or vice versa. That sort of thing, I think, is it makes it difficult. Some things can be seen, though, like Josh Morrissey. I think we've seen a completely refreshed Josh Morrissey. He's looked excellent throughout the course of the preseason. Again, just the preseason, so you don't get too excited about it. You don't get too worked up. You just think to yourself, okay, you make a note of that. But like people are saying, well, Pierre-Luc Dubois didn't look phenomenal yet. I'm like, well, guys, first of all, he made some nice plays. I thought defensively he looked really good. He made that real nice effort when the Jets were on the power play to get back and kill a shorthanded chance again. So I wouldn't be worried. I mean, like I think I said, 10 to 15 games into the season, or maybe not, maybe I didn't say 10 to 15, but maybe I said 10 games into the season. I think I was talking about with respect to Eric Comrie, but that's when you really can start drawing your conclusions, not necessarily, in preseason game six. I know that's not what you asked me, Drew, but I just kind of thought it was important to talk about, just because I think the mindset sometimes folks get with respect to some of these games. And I get it. You're watching the game, you're invested in the game, and you think, well, this is something that you're drawing a conclusion from. I just think you just need to caution it. With respect to the power play, quickly, because I think as he hit it a lot, I think the truth is that what Paul Maurice has tried to do, A, is try to get a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois invested and feeling good and having success. But he's also showing that he's got such a dynamic team. It's got so many weapons that they're going to be lethal either way. Whether it's power play one, power play two, this is a pick your poison. You're going to get burned. It's just a matter of when, not if. Like this team is going to burn you with their power play. There's no question about it. And does Blake Wheeler need to move off the power play one and maybe give that to Ed Ehlers? Well, I mean, that becomes a function of, do you want to overbalance one and have it, run that risk of having one be cool and one be hot, stay hot. So I think he's trying to keep it balanced and allow Nikolaj Ehlers not to have to be deferential. He called it the Ehlers power play unit, essentially. If Nikolaj Ehlers has the puck on that second power play unit, he doesn't have to find Mark Scheifele. He doesn't have to find Blake Wheeler. He can be the man. And everybody wants Nikolaj Ehlers to be the man. Well, this is his opportunity to be the man on second unit, which, as we saw, gets a lot. Well, exactly. But they usually get fairly equal time in terms of power play.
Well, it's an interesting perspective, that he can just go out there and he knows that power play two runs through him. He is the driver of the power play two. Whereas, to your point there, Dave, that if he was on power play one with, with so many other tremendous snipers and tremendous goal scorers, like you said, he might be a little deferential. It's almost like he was a little deferential for whatever reason to Patrick Laine back in the day. Now, I'm not saying that Laine, that's not a commentary about the trade. That's just saying that there was a reality. You never saw sort of Nikolaj Ehlers as the alpha, in that situation. Now, on that second power play unit, he knows, it's been talked about that, he needs to be the driver. He needs to be the one that sort of the power play runs through and is effective for. And as a result, there's, it makes a little bit more sense. What I don't want to see, and this is something that came up at times last year, is that the first unit goes out and gets 90 seconds and the second unit gets 30 seconds. It's one thing if the first unit is generating and is getting their opportunities in the course of their first 60 seconds of the power play. But too often, I thought last year, that first power play unit was generating nothing, could barely even get a zone entry, and they still stuck out there for too long. And then by the time the second unit came out, it was really a very limited opportunity. I'd like to see more balance and the first unit to have sort of the perspective that if it's not going on one power play opportunity, don't try and jam that square peg into the round hole. Give it to the second unit, the Ehlers unit, and see what they can generate.
Yeah, and it's obviously, you know, hard to, you know, you know, distribute the ice time, you know, a minute for each unit, right, Drew? Right. You know that.
I'm not saying exactly a minute. You know what?
No,
I'm saying.
I know. And last year at times, like you said, a minute and a half. Sometimes it was closer to 2 minutes, right? And that's a function, I think, of how skilled the top power play unit is, right? And, you know, Dave mentioned, you know, seventh in the NHL, and we expect it to probably go higher. I mean, there's no reason why it shouldn't be higher. At the very least, I think we all expect the Jets to have a top 10 a power play. But you're right. I mean, balance is the key. And, you know, to me, guys, like the power play, I mentioned it earlier, it's the least of my concerns. Like, I think, you know, what I'm going to be watching, especially early on in the regular season, is, you know, the second, third, and fourth lines. I mean, we all know what we're going to get out of the top line. And we talked about, you know, is Ehlers at some point going to kind of establish himself more? And then you maybe see Wheeler drop down to the second line. But it's how the Jets play at even strength and how these new line combinations, you know, function at even strength. Because we know, you know, Kopp is most likely going to stay on that second line with Dubois and Ehlers. And then, you know, most likely it's probably going to be, you know, Vesalainen with Lowry and Stastny. And then we talked about that fourth line, right? Most likely it's going to be some combination of, you know, Harkins, Riley Nash, Svechnikov. I mean, Toninato's in the conversation. David Gustafson is in the conversation. But really, the special teams guys, and, you know, I'm not overstating it. I'm not saying that the Jets are going to have the number one power play unit and the number one penalty kill, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they're top 10 in both. I mean, we saw, you know, what happened last year. You know, when, you know, Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry were out of the lineup, the Jets penalty kill really struggled. But I agree with Dave. It's all about the weaponry. Like, you just have so many good players that you can choose from. And really, the Jets are one of those teams that their second power play unit is almost just as dangerous as their top power play unit. So for me, I've kind of moved off the Ehlers being on the top power play because he's really effective on that second power play unit. And then, as you said earlier, you kind of balance out, you know, your talent. So yeah, easily, you know, you could see Ehlers, you know, playing in that quote unquote kind of Blake Wheeler bumper position. I just don't see, you know, that necessarily happening, you know, early in the season or maybe at all this season. But that power play, I mean, you talk about the Edmonton Oilers, you know, you talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, the Jets are just as dangerous as both of those teams.
They certainly should have an effective power play. No question about that. The Jets' first game, of course, is coming Wednesday. They're in Anaheim to meet the Ducks. This gives us a good opportunity to remind you, following Wednesday's game, you've been clamoring for it all preseason. The Illegal Curve post-game show comes back to you following Wednesday night's game. It'll be a late night edition of the Illegal Curve post-game show, but join us back here on our YouTube channel on Wednesday. And then after each and every of the 82-plus playoff games, we'll see about those, of course, for the Illegal Curve post-game show. So join us back here on our YouTube channel for those starting this coming Wednesday in Anaheim and then Saturday night still in California, in Northern California, in San Jose. Looking at the Central Division, guys, because that's where the Jets are, of course, back to being where they are used to being in the Central. The Arizona Coyotes are now also a Central Division team. Other than that, it is, as we remember from a few years ago,
over under 50 points for Arizona.
50 is pretty low, as I'm going to say over, but I mean, it's...
Have you looked at that roster? Have you looked at the roster?
I have. It's pretty terrible, admittedly. I mean, you know, it's bad. Look, the Central Division is not the juggernaut that we remember it from, you know, 3 years ago. It's not as challenging a division as we remember. Now, is it better than the Pacific Division? I would say yes, probably. But it's really, you know, I'd say the Jets, you know, you got the Jets and the Avalanche, I would say, are as the as the two best teams in the Central, in my estimation. And then you got, you know, St. Louis and Dallas and Minnesota and even maybe Nashville sort of right there, you know, maybe a step behind. But it's not, I mean, these are not, it's not a division littered with Stanley Cup contenders in my mind.
Not no, like it's it was, not, it's you know, not 2018.
It's really like, not.
Yeah. I mean, Colorado is talent wise, I think, a step above the rest of the division. I agree with you, Drew. Like, I would probably put the Jets as the second best team. Now, you know, just because we're saying they're the second best team doesn't necessarily mean they're going to finish with the second, you know, most points.
Of course not.
But that's what we're expecting. I mean, if everything goes according to plan and based on, you know, the additions the Jets have made, I really like Minnesota. And I we'll get into our predictions later. I mean, I think the Wild are definitely going to be in the conversation for a playoff spot. I think I like Dallas maybe a little bit more than, you know, some people. I mean, there's big injury concerns in Dallas, just in terms of, you know, how Sagan and Radulov are going to do. And they should be fine. I mean, they were, you know, year after year, they were, you know, offensive point producers. But there's no doubt that this Central Division is more open than it was 3 or 4 years ago. And then the team that really, you know, not many people are talking about right now is the Chicago Blackhawks. And I think the Chicago Blackhawks have holes on their roster. But whenever you bring in Marc-Andre Fleury and Seth Jones, like, we're not talking about, you know, mediocre players here, boys. We're talking about, you know, a future Hall of Famer. And say whatever you want about Jones and his, you know, declining advanced stats. I mean, this guy's at the very least a bona fide top four defenseman. He might not be, you know, a top 20 defenseman like, you know, many of us thought he was 2 or 3 years ago. But bringing in Seth Jones makes your defense better. I would rather have Jones than an aging Duncan Keith, put it that way. Bringing in a guy like a Tyler Johnson, Drew, like, they've made some moves that they're going to be a much more competitive team. And then, you know, I'll let Dave get in here, but one guy that it feels like we haven't talked about in 5 years is Jonathan Toews. Like, Jonathan Toews is healthy. He didn't play at all last year. So even if, you know, Toews is, you know, 80% of what he was a couple of years ago, you know, you're getting a pretty good player. So I think, you know, Chicago's going to be in that conversation. You know, you mentioned Nashville earlier, Drew. I don't really like Nashville this year. I just don't. I think they're going to be okay defensively, you know, with UC Saros and Net. And as long as you've got, you know, Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm there, you're going to be fine on defense. I kind of wonder where the goals are going to come from. I think they're one of those kind of, you know, just teams that, you know, might squeak into the playoffs, but most likely in that division, I see them, you know, kind of being around 85 to 88 points, something like that. It's probably going to take, you know, 90 plus points to get in, but I love it, boys. Like, thank God that the Central Division is back. Like, the Canadian Division was neat. It was unique for 1 year, but, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing those Jets Wild battles and those Jets, you know, Avalanche games to determine, you know, playoff seeding. So, it's going to be a very competitive division, but yeah, not as good as it was 3 years ago. That's for sure.
I would agree with that. Dave, what do you think about what, you know, from the Jets perspective and their Central Division rivals and, you know, just sort of trying to get a handle on how this division will shape up. I think this year is, you know, Toews made some very good points that there's, you know, forget about the Jets and forget about the Avalanche for a second. You have the teams that are right underneath it that all have things you like, but then they also have flaws that are readily apparent. And I think that's sort of, you know, which team can sort of either mitigate their flaws or overcome their flaws is, I think, going to be one of the most interesting functions of this Central Division this year, especially as the teams begin to beat up on one another.
Yeah, I think there's always that question mark, because there's a lot of like middling teams. There's a lot of teams that kind of all look around like around the same point. And to what you guys have just said, you've got really Colorado and Winnipeg look like they're maybe a step above, although Colorado just lost Pavel Francouz for, you know, a little bit of time. So, I mean,
6 weeks, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, that's kind of the question mark for the Avs, right? In terms of goaltending, what's going to happen there? I mean, that is a significant situation, obviously, right? You don't want to have lose your goaltender in, especially this early in the season. Obviously Colorado has the depth from a forward defensive perspective to be able to offset that a little bit. It's kind of a similar mantra here in Winnipeg, but you see that reality, and it'll be interesting to see how that works at the start of the season for Colorado, because what we've often seen, guys, is this could be an opportunity for Winnipeg to cement themselves. I know you asked me about the other teams, but I just want to make this point to really kind of you know, it's kind of like a horse race. And sometimes the horse that breaks out of the gate quickly and takes the lead, you know, those horses sometimes can just keep it the entire race, the entirety of the race. So, you know, will they be, the Jets be able to get out to a good start and hold on to it? Well, again, health is going to be a big factor for the Jets, as it will be for every team. But I think it just gives them that kind of that opportunity to set themselves a little bit above Colorado. And then from there, you know, you look after the Jets, 3-5, I think is pretty much a toss up at this point.
Let's welcome in Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press to keep the Winnipeg Jets conversation going on this Saturday morning. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel, our Facebook page, and our Twitter feed as well. Hammer, good morning. Nice to see you.
Gentlemen, nice to see you. Not many better faces to see on a Saturday morning than these guys. Dave, I like the ambience. It feels nice and cozy. I put a hoodie on. Let's talk Jets.
Let's talk Jets. Exactly right there, Jeffrey. Obviously, the preseason mercifully comes to an end. That's always a good feeling when we no longer have to pretend that these games are a life and death battle. I would say, you know, what is your sort of, what takeaway did you have from the Jets preseason, if there was one more than any other?
You know, it was an interesting one for me, and I think for a lot of people, because the focus really was, you know, I guess the focus is a little bit on some of the storylines that bleed in from the previous year, like what's Pierre-Luc Dubois going to look like, you know, all these other kind of narratives, but we aren't really going to get any answers to those, and I don't think anyone's really expecting that from the preseason. It was unique for me because it was finally a look at, you know, those few spots in the bottom six and who was going to carve what role out, what do these new guys look like, you know, guys like Riley Nash, guys like Jansen Harkins, who, you know, struggled to get in and out of the lineup last season. And to me, so it was kind of extra boring in a sense for the preseason, because it's, you know, the identity problem areas for the Jets this season is no longer the defense. It's who's going to fill in that bottom six. So, you know, again, it's not all just watching bottom six, but it's really, you know, that was the takeaways for me, was who's going to carve that out. Christian Vesalainen obviously getting every opportunity possible to take over that jump off spot on that third line with Adam Lowry. Jump off being, you know, everyone who's been in that spot's jumped off to better days and better lives. So, you know, I don't know if he's actually stolen that spot yet, but I just, you know, it's an interesting one because, you know, as I'll echo again, you know, we enter these camps with major issues in previous years, and there was just such a lack of drama this season that I felt like, you know, I felt like the preseason almost lasted a little extra long than it usually normally does.
You know, Hammer, you said jump off so many times, it makes me want to, you know, listen to some Little Kim. If you, you know, remember the song jump off by Little Kim. Shout out to Brooklyn. And I can't believe I'll get
into my hard-hitting Jets question here.
Yeah, absolutely. The entire junior mafia is watching. But
what are you guys talking about?
Didn't mention. Come on, Drew. You know you're hip hop.
Yeah, I don't.
Come on, Biggie Smalls all day.
All day.
Spread love the Brooklyn way. Come on, Drew. But you know, I can't believe Drew didn't mention that 30-3 win. We obviously you know, read the coverage in the Winnipeg Free Press, Hammer. So that defense, I don't think has ever looked better for the Bombers. That was just an absolute masterpiece last night. The Elks just couldn't do anything. But
I mean, I just got to interrupt you there for a second. I don't think we're making that, you know, people in general are paying enough attention to how incredible an accomplishment it is that through 9 games, the Bombers have given up 6 fourth quarter points. I mean, that is a stat that you can't really wrap your brain around as to how impactful and impressive and just utterly dominant that Bombers defense is. Jeff, you know this better than we do. You cover them, you know, game in and game out, but it's just, I mean, they're toying with their opposition.
Well, it's just, and the crazy thing is they seem to get better every week. Like, I'm not saying like we're waiting for them to fall off a cliff or anything like that, but we're kind of like expecting a bit of a letdown at some point. And I don't, you know, if you'd watched the game yesterday, the very first play of the game should have been an interception by the Bombers defense, and DeAndre Alford dropped it. And so I wasn't saying that, thinking that was going to foreshadow anything, but it was like, okay, like they seem to be making plays. Sure enough, 5 turnovers, 3 safeties, guys. Now, I've sent in a couple emails. It wasn't like it was a windy day. It wasn't like it was this, you know, all these conditions that lead to automatic, you know, safeties. It was just 3 suffocating drives where the Elks had no better option than to kneel and give the ball back to the Bombers. And so it's just, you know, it really is incredible, you know, certainly not taking anything away from the defense or the offense with my next comment here, but it just seems to the perfect storm where the Bombers seem to be so much better than everybody else. And I don't know if the CFL seems like it's been worse with everybody else. Like, I just don't see like another team contending with Winnipeg. Like, Saskatchewan is going through drama where, and I know this is a Jets show, I'll make it quick. Saskatchewan's going through a drama where the next best team, the quarterback is apologizing to his receivers for comments post game. That's the next best situation in the CFL. So, you know, it's honestly like to be a Winnipeg sports fan right now, to have, you know, the Jets season coming up here and just having the Bombers season, you know, just kind of roll along as smoothly as it has. It's been certainly incredible. And the defense has a lot of credit to do with that.
Absolutely. And the thing is, Bombers fans deserve it, right? Like, all of those years of playoff disappointment or regular season disappointment, like, Bombers fans have, and not to mention the organization, you know, they deserve to be on top, right? Like, this is not a position the Bombers have been in a lot lately, especially, you know, over the last however many, you know, years, 5 or 6 years. But yeah, it's definitely a good time to be a Winnipeg sports fan, Hammer. I agree. I wanted to ask you, we were talking right before you came on about the Central Division, and we kind of wanted to get your take, you know, looking at the rest of the division. Obviously, we're not going to have to watch Ottawa and Calgary, you know, 10 times this year. But do you kind of look at this division like, okay, Colorado's the most talented team, they're probably going to be around 110, 115 points. Jets are the second best team. And then you've got kind of Minnesota, Dallas, St. Louis, those teams kind of, you know, competing for those last couple of playoff spots. Like, where do you think the, you know, the rivalry is going to be this year, you know, for the Jets? Is it pretty clearly going to be, you know, trying to catch the Colorado Avalanche? Because it looks like most likely they're going to be, you know, the team with the most points in the division.
Yeah. Yeah. As I mean, absolutely. Like, you look at that division, I think everyone's that division, I think everyone's looking at Colorado as being one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. So, you know, is everybody kind of chasing the Avalanche? Probably, particularly in the West and particularly the Winnipeg Jets in the Central. Now, I think this is going to be an interesting year. I don't know how COVID factors into all this per se, but obviously last season was very, very unique. And there's going to be unique circumstances with this season. You know, maybe some guys, and I don't want to get too psychoanalyst here, but like maybe some guys saw last year. I think there's some excitement. I think there's some opportunity here for some surprise teams. And I don't know who those teams are. You know, I wouldn't rule out St. Louis. I feel like they seem to find things, you know, that gear when they need to. Minnesota's quietly been a good team for you know, a fair amount of time here. But I really do look at Colorado as kind of the cream of the crop in that group. And then I look at the Jets right away, because you look at what they have on paper. And, you know, as Blake Wheeler said, paper means nothing. He obviously used a lot more colorful language than I just did there. But, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, the Jets and how good they're going to be compared to the best team in the league. They're going to be seeing them quite a bit. It's going to be a lot of crazy divisional games. Maybe there's some rivalry building there, especially if you're chasing that top spot. But you look at some of the other teams, and I'm very curious about Nashville. I feel like it's a very confusing situation there where, you know, they've got, you know, this is life without Pekka-Rinne. Let's see, you know, obviously Saros has been really good. So it's not like, I feel like that's going to be a major issue here, but you know, do the Stars kind of figure it out? I feel like the Stars are going to be either really, really good or really, really bad. They don't seem to have an in-between. And, you know, you look at some of the other clubs, like, you know, what's Arizona going to look like? They've been trending in weird ways at weird times. You know, like the drama doesn't necessarily match the on-ice product. The drama off-ice doesn't actually match the on-ice product. So I'm just looking forward to getting back to divisional games, you know. And I, you know, even if you look at the Jets, even if you look at the entire division, I don't think it's that, you know, you often hear the heavy Central Division. This is going to be a bit, you know, whatever. There are the teams in there that have size. St. Louis, as I mentioned, you know, they're always kind of sneaky good. Minnesota is going to be a tough forechecking team, but it feels more skilled in this division. So I wonder how that changes things. I, you know, and it just kind of transfer from there. Like, I feel like the Jets have a new system too, based on their skill, not on being heavy, being kind of, you know, I think obviously they're still going to prioritize the forecheck because they have speed, but I just feel like this division is, I don't want to say wide open because Colorado is that team up top, but I'm very, very, very curious on how the rest of it kind of, you know, trickles down, even if I do have the Jets kind of sitting there as the team knocking on the door to, you know, shake off the Avalanche for top spot.
Well, Jeff, we lost Drew as the host, so I'm going to be hosting for the next few minutes.
That means sit here and wait for Drew to come back or what?
No.
It was too good to be true, Hammer. Too good to be true.
I have a special announcement. Did I get to be on the show where, you know, it's like Ez takes over as host or what's the plan here?
I had a bit of a nuclear meltdown with my computer set up for a second there. So my apologies. I'm back and I hope nobody missed me too dramatically at that point.
I didn't want to go on with my answer, Drew, until you came back. I just didn't know if it'd be, you know, if it was all of us.
Yeah, I was like, I was going to try and do an introduction there, Drew, but Jeff was reluctant to go without you being the resetter. So please reset, Drew.
Saturday morning, you're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press. We're talking about the upcoming Winnipeg Jets season. Starts Wednesday night, regular season in Anaheim against the Ducks. Reminder, right after the game on Wednesday, the Illegal Curve post-game show. Back here on our YouTube channel, game one of 82 regular season games. We'll see you then. Hammer, good to see you again. Apologies for my nuclear meltdown.
No, always a pleasure, man. You guys know I love being on here with you guys. It's awesome.
All right, Jeff. So you know, you wrote about the Lowry line and the change that folks are going to see. And you talked about how that, you know, just in your previous answer to Ezzy, that idea of how the Jets are going to play a different style. So maybe, like, what were your real insights? Because I know you wrote about it in the Winnipeg Free Press a couple days ago about how that third line is going to look different, play different for this season.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting storyline heading into the season because for years we've just kind of, you know, Adam Lowry's been synonymous with this, you know, quote unquote shutdown line, that this is the line that the Jets are going to use as, you know, to shut down the other opponents, one of their top lines, and open up and ultimately open up some space and to play against some lesser competition for one of those two top lines. Now, it obviously depends on, you know, where they are, home and away. When you have home, you have last change. You can kind of manipulate that a little bit easier. But we've been so used to Adam Lowry's line racking up big minutes and debating whether or not they're going to be whether or not they're actually the third line, just based on minutes and where, you know, as Maurice likes to say, when they come off the bench. I think they're going to be coming off the bench third now. So it's going to be a third line because they're giving it an entirely new look. And it's fascinating too, because there's a couple different reasons why. One, when they were playing that role, that shutdown role, yes, you were opening up opportunities for one of those top two lines to play against lesser competition, in some cases, even third pairing defensemen. Well, the reason why, well, when you have that many minutes given to Adam Lowry's line, you're taking away minutes from somebody. And I think we've hit this situation now where the top six, you know, those guys, obviously Wheeler, Shifley, Connor, you know, Stastny, of course, Ehlers and Pierre-Luc Dubois, they all want ice time. You know, they all want to be playing big minutes. They all want to feel that role. And they're all, for the most part, Pierre-Luc Dubois being a little bit young, but the rest of those guys, Stastny being a little bit old, are all in their prime. This is no longer just, not only do they want the minutes, but I think they have they've earned the responsibility to have them. I feel like there's an actual trust from Paul Maurice to put, you know, got the top lines up against their top lines and not just survive but thrive. So, and that's just, and you know, another point of that is to take away that whole checking line aspect, the personnel is much different. So you now have Paul Stastny on the wing. You now possibly, it looks like, Christian Vesalainen will get that opportunity. Well, that's not the ideal shutdown line. That's not the hard on the puck. This, to me, is now an opportunity for them to play other teams' third lines and have that edge, have that offensive edge. So now you're looking at, I don't want to say three scoring lines per se, but if you're looking at giving more minutes to the Ehlers, who, you know, everyone wants to give Ehlers, you know, a couple more minutes a game, which makes sense. It's all, you know, that's what the analytics are training. That's what we see, you know, every time this guy touches the ice, the excitement, they're going to be a true 1-2 line now. And you're going to see minutes like Adam Lowry's line I think, decrease because their role is going to be decreased, but the expectation is they're going to add to that scoring touch. Now, obviously, that line has other responsibilities, penalty killing, some of the team's best penalty killers are on that line, so it's not like their minutes are going to go drastically down. I just think it's if you read between the lines of what Paul Maurice is saying, it's, you know, these players like the Nick Ehlers and stuff, they're finally hitting a situation in their careers where they're in their prime, and now they're going to be expected to not just go head to head against the other opponent's top lines, but the expectation is they're going to succeed. We'll see how long that takes, because if they don't do that and they need to open up a bit more of the offense, you could see a transition back into Adam Lowry, possibly Andrew Kopp dropping down to that line, then filling in another hard forechecker and going back to an old philosophy. But to me, this is a shift in philosophy completely. It speaks to the new systems that they're going to be employing in all different zones. And it also speaks to the increase in defense, because I also think what happens with all that is that, you know, you take some of that pressure off those top lines, you're also taking pressure off the defense because you're going head to head against a forward line who's very, very defensively responsible. Now, if this all works out, I think it's a great, great plan, because you don't necessarily need a design check, you know, checking line to take on the other team's top lines, if you can trust that your top lines will not only go head to head with them, but win those battles more nights than not. And I think that's where we're seeing this philosophy. This is a result of that in the third line, and why their role is probably going to drastically change this season compared to the previous ones.
Jeff, you talk about expectations, and there's certainly expectations on this Winnipeg Jets team this year. Absolutely. And I think that translates also behind the bench to Paul Maurice. For the last couple of years, he's been able to point to the defense and say, yes, but, you know, what did you want me to do? This is the defense you gave me. He can't do that anymore. You know, Kevin Cheveldayoff got him the reinforcements that the team needed on the blue line. Mm-hmm. How much pressure do you think there is on the Jets head coach this year to maybe, you know, take that monkey off his back a little bit and get that team to a level that they really haven't been able to get to for the past few seasons?
Oh, I think it's completely there. I mean, the expectations have never been higher. Not only have you addressed, you've kind of taken care of all the things that people have been screaming for the last couple seasons. You know, some of those things weren't on you per se. Obviously, the Dustin Byfuglien weird exit from things, and then the fallout from that because of the moves being made. So it was kind of like, oh yeah, well, our defense just isn't there. And then it just bled into another season. Well, hey guys, you know, we're staying in the fight, but we're considered Stanley Cup contenders. Like, it's just, you know, whatever. But then you have this year, you address all that. And now, like I said, you know, earlier in the conversation, like, the drama is at a very, very small amount. The drama is now who's going to fill out the area that, you know, in reality, guys, if what's, you know, I know, and this is the thing about training camp, we attach kind of like an affinity to guys like Svechnikov, Jansen Harkins, you know, some of the deeper guys that you finally want to see flourish, you want to see earn regular jobs. Let's see how that works out in the regular season. Let's see how they can perform, because at the end of the day, if you're going to address your if you have to address your top end defense, it's a lot harder to do in season. If you need to pick up some valuable guys in the bottom, you know, units of your forward group, you can do that at any point of the year and not sell your future on it. So all those kind of things are now in place that maybe Paul Maurice is looking at and saying, this is finally the lineup that I want to install my system. And I think the whole changing of systems this year is interesting, because I think for a lot of years, what I think the biggest knock against Paul Maurice was he was trying to instill a game that didn't work with the players that he had, didn't work with the age of players that he had, didn't work with the skill set of the players that he had. He was constantly asking these guys far too much to do every single season. They were like asking to be hard forecheckers. They're asking to be, you know, all kind of, you know, unique in their own skill sets, but consistent in how they attacked every system. And it just felt like it was an exhausting practice for them night in and night out. So that's just a long roundabout way of saying this is a big year for them. Of course, there's pressure on Paul Maurice. They've spent to the cap, so it's not like they have a ton of money left. It's not like you can say, hey, why are you sitting on this bag of cash? Let's go get some guys that we need. The interesting part in all that, I think, is I think they're going to pay dividends in what they've done this season, this offseason, particularly on the blue line. I do believe it's going to pay off a couple different ways. I think Brendan Dillon brings, you know, a bit of a nastiness to the blue line that the Winnipeg Jets have kind of lacked, that front net presence, which I think has been frustrating on a lot of nights where the Jets have been pushed around. And it's kind of in those battles you look and wonder if this team could go deep in the playoffs. I think that's fixed. Nate Schmidt, you know, he brings obviously a quality to the blue line. He also brings a quality to the locker room where there's a lot more leaders in there. And it's not just Nate Schmidt. Brendan Dillon's in that camp too. Other guys are stepping up in leadership roles. So there's pressure off Blake Wheeler to be the voice every night. There's a bit more fun injected into the room. So when you think of all those things, you know, whether it's a culture improvement, whether it's a roster improvement, whatever you want to look at and see what's improved, and there's been a lot, you have to think, okay, this is the season. This is, you know, this is the year that everything kind of comes together and hopefully it pays dividends. Now, I will say one thing to all this, though, is that I wonder how the pieces work. You know what I mean? Because we just see it on paper. We don't know how this is going to translate to a regular season. You know, Nate Schmidt, I mean, he's absolutely incredible when it comes to, you know, spitting a quote for media and, you know, all these things, like I said, brings that energy. But he isn't coming off a great season with the Canucks. And whether that's related to COVID-19 and all the, you know, the stuff that happened there, very, very well could be. But he hasn't been great. So, you know, he is an improvement on the blue line, but how big an improvement? And a big part of that is chemistry. So as we know, chemistry works obviously through practice and on-ice drills and all those things and building that through that those avenues, but it also works in some of the off-ice stuff. And so when you consider what the Jets were able to do, how often they were able to stay in the fight last season, you know, those were things they were doing with a lackluster defense and they were still hanging around. So all those things considered, if you look at the improvements on the blue line, you look at even some of the improvements up front, how do you not expect the Jets to be better? And if it doesn't work out, well, then I think there's, you know, I think we've kind of not reached the end of Paul Maurice's tenure. That's pretty dramatic, but it does expose, you know, the coaching if they can't get this thing up and running sooner than later.
Jeff, what do you see happening with Cole Perfetti at the beginning of the regular season? Because I think you would agree that there's a good chance that he makes the opening night roster, especially with Mark Scheifele, you know, still having to serve that last game of his suspension. So do you see him sticking around for a few games at the beginning of the season and then being reassigned to the Moose and playing the majority of the season there? Like, obviously, yeah, you can't, you know, go too far into the crystal ball and look, you know, throughout the regular season. But especially, you know, to start here, what do you see happening with Perfetti?
You know, this kid is doing everything in his power to prevent the Jets, sending him to the Moose. And, you know, I'm not saying they're necessarily looking for an excuse to, but he's got this IQ that just suggests he's ready sooner than later. Now, is he ready right now? I think you can make the argument that he isn't, in the sense that even though he played last year in the American Hockey League and did well, and he played in the World Championships and all that, and all that, those were all absolutely incredible for his development. I'm not suggesting he's not going to have an impact in the Jets this season, maybe in the playoffs, guys, if they, you know, they bring him up later on. I just don't know if it's the right fit for him this season, given where the holes are for the Jets. Like, you know, I look at a guy like Cole Caulfield, who came in obviously with the Habs last year and kind of stole the show. He was put on a line with absolutely dominant players. And I just don't know if that would be afforded to Cole Perfetti. And unless it is, I just don't know if it would translate as well. And I would suggest another year, you know, of professional hockey, of learning how to be a pro, of learning those kind of, you know, consistencies day in and day out of being a professional hockey player are really, really important for development. And I think he gets that with the Moose. He certainly gets the ice time. He certainly gets the opportunity. That being said, I do understand fans who look at this kid and go, wow, you know, and think this guy can make plays. He's got that part of his game. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He's certainly not the biggest, which also plays a role in whether or not you want to rush him into the NHL level. But I see this guy being a very, very popular player for the Jets. I see him being a very skilled player for the Jets. And hey, you know what? If he continues to trend the way he's doing, I wouldn't be surprised. I think he will be in the opening day lineup. He might get the, you know, early games treatment. And if he can do something super special there, don't want to put too much pressure on him. Hey, maybe he sticks around later. But at this point, you really have to look at what you have up front. You have to look at those entry-level years and need to make a decision of whether or not this is the year you think Cole Perfetti needs to make that jump.
No, Jeff, I spent the entire first segment cautioning folks that they shouldn't read too much into the preseason because there's, you know, so many different factors as to why you wouldn't do that. But I'm going to ask you to read into the preseason for one player in particular, because to me, Josh Morrissey looks like he's completely refreshed and like a reborn or a renewed Josh Morrissey. What have you seen from him through the games he's played and also what he's been able to do at training camp?
Well, you know, I just see a bit of a freer player, you know, whether that, you know, I think, you know, mentally, obviously Josh, you know, having quietly went through what he went through last season with his father battling cancer and ultimately dying, you know, that's obviously a lot to hang on a player who pretty much needs to be razor focused at all times to gain that edge in this league. So, you know, this is kind of the stuff we don't really see going on behind the scenes. You know, we didn't even hear rumblings that this was happening, you know, so that doesn't even soften the, you know, the swords out there, because Josh Morrissey got, I don't want to say he got, you know, brought through the ringer last season, but he certainly has been criticized. It was criticized for his play and, you know, people debating whether or not, you know, he's even a first, you know, top pairing defenseman in this league and all those things. And when you kind of put that side to side with some of the, you know, mental battles he was going through last season, you know, it becomes a bit more understanding, obviously. And so through the preseason here, you know, you just see a confidence, you know, maybe there's a bit of a weight lifted off his shoulders. You know, maybe I can't even fathom that process that he would have went through, but it, you know, it's very clear in the articles you read about him and just the man you talk to, you know, we talk to every single day. He's got a great head on his shoulders. He's a mature guy. I think he's mentally tough. I think he's the kind of person who will be able to, you know, who can deal with first the criticism, but also I think someone who kind of, you know, sees the gratitude in this game. And I think he's, you know, I think he, if you were to ask him, I think he's learned a ton, you know, about himself over this last year. And I think that can be really freeing as a hockey player. So, you know, like you said, Dave, you can't read too much into the preseason, but you see a Josh Morrissey through these last few weeks that just seems a little bit more free. That's kind of the best word I can use. It's just a guy that isn't, you know, overthinking too much. He's, you know, he probably realized the value of life and having fun and enjoying the moment. And you hear hockey players say it all the time, right? Like, you know, it's a big push in sports over the last while here as we, you know, focus in on mental health and everything, is trying to find that ability to have fun. And that's probably the most difficult thing for an athlete, particularly younger athletes, to see through, you know, the daily grind and all that stuff and actually be able to smile on a day-to-day basis. And I think you know, what Josh Morrissey's gone through over the last year, he's got that. I think that's going to translate into his game and just the person he is. And I think, you know, a bounce back year is bound for Josh for sure this season.
Jeff Hamilton covers the Winnipeg Jets. He covers the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He covers all sorts of other things for the Winnipeg Free Press. Hammer, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, buddy.
Hey guys, thanks for sharing your morning with me, and shout out to the comments. You know that they drive these things. So, you know, nothing but love out there, guys. Thanks for having me on, and I'll come on anytime. Appreciate you guys' time.
We're going to hold you to that, Jeff. Thanks so much, buddy. We'll let you get on with your Saturday morning. There he goes, Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press, joining us here on the program. Let's take our first break. When we come back, much more on the Jets, much more as part of our season preview show. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Big thanks to Jeff Hamilton for joining us to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. Marty B. Ron going to join us in about 30 minutes time or so, talk more about everything else going around the NHL as we get set for the 2021-22 season as part of our season preview show. Gentlemen, give me your playoff teams from the Central Division. It can be three teams, four teams, or five teams. It's your choice. Give me what you think is going to come out of the Central Division and compete for Lord Stanley's Cup next April.
Thank you for also telling us how many teams can possibly come out of the Central Division. I needed clarification there, Drew, but obviously Colorado is going to be one of those teams, and the Jets are going to be one of those teams, and I'm going to go with four. I think there's going to be four from the Central, four from the Pacific, even though the Central is clearly a better division. I've talked about Dallas quite a bit during this offseason. Like, I like Dallas. And guys, it seems like people forget that, you know, they were in the Stanley Cup final 2 years ago. And, you know, people forget that one of the main reasons why they missed the playoffs last year was because Seguin and Radulov combined for, I think, 11 games. So, like, I like the Ryan Suter acquisition. That defense is already, you know, I think a top 10 defense in the NHL, especially when you're talking about Miro Heiskanen, who's going to compete for a Norris Trophy. So I've got Dallas as one of my four teams making it from the Central. Another thing that we should mention is it looks like there's a good chance Braden Holtby is going to be their starting goalie to start the season. And he's actually looked really good in preseason, but they've also got Anton Khudobin and Jake Oettinger in there as well. Ben Bishop has not played in the preseason, so he's not going to be an option. He might miss an extended portion of the regular season, but I like Dallas. And then Minnesota, guys. Like, I think Minnesota was one of those underrated teams last year. And yeah, are they going to miss Suter a little bit? Yeah. Are they going to miss a guy like Carson Soucy on the back end who went to Seattle? Yeah, but you know, there's a lot of offense there. The goaltending's strong. I think Alex Goligoski, you know, is, even though, you know, he's on a short-term deal, I think, you know, he'll fill in, you know, in that Ryan Suter hole, especially on the power play. We know Goligoski has always been a good power play player throughout his career. So Minnesota is my fourth team coming out of the Central, but I could easily pick five.
Yeah, but you said you're only going to pick four. So Dave, are you picking 3, 4, or 5?
I'm going with 5.
Okay, let me have him.
I like St. Louis, I like Colorado, Winnipeg, Dallas, and Minnesota.
Okay.
I think Dave, Chicago, I think, is a big question mark. I think Chicago is one of the teams
both
that,
in the conversation. I think
one of you going to say something? You guys were just interrupting each other.
No, nothing. I stopped to let us get in there, but no, I think it's, to me, Minnesota is that St. Louis. That's what I talked about when we kind of started to get on this before Jeff joined the show, was this idea of those teams that are all kind of in that middle. I really think Colorado, Winnipeg are a step above. And as he outlined some good points about Dallas, I think Dallas is in that mix. I think St. Louis is in that mix. I think Minnesota's in that mix. I think Nashville has taken a step back. I think Arizona is going to be just terrible this year. And I think that Chicago is the biggest question mark.
They really are. They could easily be the worst team in the league.
Yeah. I think they're, I think let's put it this way. I think Arizona is very cognizant of how deep the draft is for next season and the next couple seasons, actually. So I think that they're thinking to themselves that there's going to be an opportunity there for them, especially given the fact that they're in a tougher division in the sense that they're terrible. So I think Arizona is not going to be in contention. And I think Nashville is not going to be in contention. So I think those two are, Chicago is the question mark. How is Marc-Andre Fleury going to look in Chicago? Johnny Toews, we're hearing that the reports out of Chicago that he looks like he's 20. We'll see if he gets the, what do they call it in basketball again? Something management,
load management,
but load management. So we'll see if Jonathan Toews is getting the load management. I mean, Chicago, even though they've got some younger players and the young prospects in there, still some older guys on that team. So we'll see what happens with Chicago, but you know, I still don't expect them to be a playoff team despite the addition of Marc-Andre Fleury. And so to me, it's really, you know, you've still got St. Louis that I think is a tough out. I'm not saying that I don't think they're as deep as they obviously once were when they were the Stanley Cup champs, but you know, and Tessie's, what Ez has just suggested, that Dallas was dealing with a lot of injuries, but I think Dallas is an older team. So I think Dallas, that's going to have to be a reality check for Dallas throughout the course of the season, which is why you could have a fall off with the Stars. They're kind of like that swing team for me, because if they can stay healthy, they can maintain it. Well, then they could be, they've got the depth, they've got some really good players. They could be a playoff team easily, but you know, you sustain a few significant injuries, which for most teams that aren't the upper echelon teams, could be catastrophic. A team like Dallas, that's kind of like in that middling point. Well, that could cost them the playoffs. So I still see that there's going to be about, in my estimation, 5 teams from the Central.
I agree with you that there's going to be 5 teams. Here are my 5 teams. We have consensus among the 3 of us on Colorado, Winnipeg, and Minnesota. I have Chicago getting in there. I think Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be a angry and pissed off Marc-Andre Fleury for how things ended in Vegas, where they just dumped him basically for nothing. And I think that's going to be to the benefit of the Chicago Blackhawks. You look at their roster. I mean, they you know the names that are familiar from, you know, Kane and Taves. You know, they have some sneaky additions. Seth Jones, to your point from earlier, as he, you know, isn't a a $9.5 million defenseman. But, you know, forget about the contract. He's an effective defenseman. Jake McCabe is going to come in, and I think Jake McCabe is going to be impactful on the blue line for the Blackhawks. Doesn't get a lot of headlines, doesn't get a lot of notoriety, but he's effective. And then you look up front, and they have, you know, Kane and Taves and DeBrincat, and you mentioned Tyler Johnson. I think he's going to be back to getting into sort of, he's not going to be what he was in his prime on Tampa, but he's certainly going to be, I think, effective and know that he's in a comfortable situation there. In Chicago,
Kirby Doc's a really good player. He doesn't get talked about enough.
Sorry, who was that?
Kirby Doc.
Kirby Doc is it? Yeah, Kirby Doc. You got Dylan Strome. I think Chicago is going to sneak in there as one of my playoff teams, along with St. Louis and Minnesota. From my perspective, it's just that you don't have the reason I don't have Dallas again. I just don't trust that they're going to stay healthy. And you look at them, after. Some of their top guys, and if those top guys get injured, then they really don't have a lot of scoring depth behind them. So that's what I think is going to be the Achilles heel for the Dallas Stars this season. So we will see. There's our Central Division teams.
I was going to say, you nailed it, Drew. The big thing with Dallas is, you know, we talked about Tyler Seguin, Alex Radulov basically missed the entire season. Jason Robertson was runner-up for the Calder Trophy to Kirill Kaprizov. He's a really good player. Rupe Hintz, good player. I mean, Denis Gurianov, I would expect him to have a really good year again. I think he had 20 goals or something. But, I mean, it definitely kind of, you know, as you go throughout the lineup, they're certainly not as deep as a team like the Jets or the Avalanche up front. Yeah. But I think there's one thing, and I disagree a little bit, you know, with Dave there. I know people are going to like that because a lot of, you know, I see listeners and viewers say that Dave and I agree too much. But I actually think that aside from Phoenix, Arizona, I don't think that I think that everyone's going to be in the playoff picture. Like Dave, like I don't have Nashville as a playoff team, but I do think Nashville is going to be competitive and they're going to be right there all year just because of, you know, who they have on the roster. Like, you know, you traded Victor Arvidsson, like, you know, everybody knows that. You know, you trade Ryan Ellis. Philip Myers is actually a pretty good defenseman though, but I just think, you know, as long as you have, you know, Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm on that back end. It is, as long as you have, you know, Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson, and I think Cody Glass is going to get every opportunity. I'm just saying, Drew, we'll see. I mean, that's why, you know, predictions are fun. I'm not predicting that they make the playoffs. I think let me be clear. I think they're going to miss the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be a 65 or 70 point team. Like I see them kind of being around 85 to 90 points. Like I'm just saying, I think they're going to be there. Arizona is going to be the whipping boy of this division. I have Arizona at 50 points this year.
That is certainly not a high number, and you're probably not wrong given
they're awful.
Yeah, they are awful. They have AHL quality goaltending, and they have a forward group that is nothing to write home about. Their defense is okay, I would say, is certainly the strength of their team. But, you know, for the most part, the Arizona Coyotes are certainly a very thin roster. And so for the Central Division teams, they'll take advantage of that. They'll be happy to welcome Arizona into their division for an opportunity to really collect some points against them. Let's move to the Pacific Division, where, from my perspective, the Pacific Division is headlined by the Vegas Golden Knights. To me, the Vegas Golden Knights are the best team in the Pacific Division. And then, you know, after that, it's a battle, for among the, I think the Flames are going to be better. The Oilers, you know, have their question marks, but they also have the skill that we know that they have. I mean, I think the Kraken are certainly in the running. I'm not sure about the Canucks, but I think, to me, from my perspective, the Golden Knights are the cream of the crop in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you say otherwise. I really don't. And yeah, like you mentioned earlier, basically Marc-Andre Fleury was given away to the Chicago Blackhawks, but you've got Lauren Brossoit now as the backup. I think what's going to be really interesting too, guys, like, yeah, Vegas most likely finishes first in that division, and there's a good chance, you know, that they go back to the conference finals, but it's going to be interesting to kind of see, you know, how the beginning part, especially if the season goes for Robin Lehner after his comments. We haven't really had a chance to get into that. And obviously, you know, he's got a really good birth date, July 24th, same as me, for those who are wondering why I'm mentioning his birth date. But I mean, good for him for sharing his mind. He's been such a, you know, outspoken advocate for mental health. He's been very public, you know, with his own struggles with mental health. And, you know, good for him for speaking out. Obviously, he's met with the NHL and the NHLPA, but I'm just going to, you know, really be watching him this year because we expect him to be, you know, one of the top goalies again for the Golden Knights. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Oilers, the Flames, the Canucks. Obviously, we saw those teams a lot, you know, this past season playing the Jets. I think the Oilers, for me, are probably, you know, the second best team in that division. And obviously, you know, a lot of the focus earlier in the offseason was on Duncan Keith. Like, for me, guys, Duncan Keith is, you know, probably the third or fourth best defenseman, you know, on the Oilers. Like, I don't know how big of an impact he's going to have on that second pair. Like, I would personally rather have Adam Larson on the back end than Duncan Keith. But obviously, you know, Kenny Holland wanted to bring in a veteran with the, you know, the Stanley Cup experience. Probably the player, you know, that's going to have the most impact is going to be Zach Hyman. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what happens with those lines, because over the last couple of years, guys like Dave Tippett, you know, we've seen him, you know, split up McDavid and Dreisaitl. We've seen, you know, McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Jesse Puljujarvi. Like, I think Zach Hyman, you know, fits in really nicely, you know, in the top six, whether it's playing with McDavid or whether it's playing with Dreisaitl or Nugent Hopkins. But I do think the Oilers are going to be a playoff team. But, you know, when you talk about Stanley Cup contenders, I just still don't think that they're there yet.
No, from my perspective, Dave, about the Oilers, they're the same team that we've seen for the last couple years. Dynamic offensively, not a ton of depth up front. Now they get better depth by bringing Hyman in. So, you know, he certainly shores up the top six there. Huge question marks on the defense. And then a goaltending situation that is maybe good enough to get you into the playoffs, but it's not good enough to win you a round. And I mean, you know, Mike Smith, you know, is certainly not getting any younger, and we saw him hit the wall. You know, maybe he doesn't hit it necessarily in the regular season, but he always hits it come playoff time, and that's when they need him to be at its best, and it hasn't been worked out that way. Mikko Koskinen is still one of the worst contracts in the NHL because we know what he is. He's an overpaid $4.5 million backup goaltender. You know, Alex Stalock is not going to be able to play this year due to COVID ramifications, and we wish him nothing but the best in his health recovery. The Oilers, to me, are still the same first round and out team at best. That's their ceiling from where I sit today on October the 9th. I just don't see any reason to think any more of them than what we've seen already.
Isn't that what I feel like we had that conversation 4 years ago. 5 years ago, 6 years ago with the Oilers. It feels like it's the same conversation.
Six years ago, they were missing the playoffs, Dave.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But the interesting thing to me for when you look at that is, Ez was right, and sort of going back to agreeing with Ezzy, but the truth is that Vegas is the cream of the crop when it comes to the Pacific. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. And LA's got a good young core. And, you know, they've got a lot of young prospects. And so it'll be interesting. They brought in a note from Montreal. I don't know that it's going to be enough for them. I mean, they may try, and they're kind of doing one of those like New York Rangers rebuild resets as opposed to anything.
Losing Anaheim. Quentin Byfield is huge for the Kings. Yep. I mean, people had the Kings as a potential sort of dark horse, but then you lose Quentin Byfield for an indeterminate amount of time to start the season, and you're already sort of behind the eight ball with a team that just doesn't have the depth. They don't have the depth up front to handle a loss, even a loss of a young player like that. They had expectations for him.
For sure. And Byfield and Perfetti, actually, two younger guys playing in the AHL last year, very similar points production between those two first rounders. But no, you're right, and so I think they've got the young talent, and they you know, when you look at you know, reflections on systems articles, like when they talk about teams that have really good depth in their systems, you know, the LA Kings is one of those teams that often gets mentioned. But I don't think they're kind of almost like Jets a few years ago, like a lot of good young quality prospects. They're just not ready to play at the NHL level yet. So that's, you know, the LA Kings, the Anaheim Ducks. I mean, they're another team that's kind of in that, you know, some really nice young prospects, but they don't really have anything to make you scared in the NHL. I think, to me, Seattle is one of those question marks. I mean, we had John Forslund on 3 weeks ago or something like that, and he talked about how this is going to be a competitive team. And they may be kind of like, as he was talking about with Chicago, one of those teams that's in it. They have some depth. They have some ability. We'll see if they can, you know, get it done. But I really look at a Vegas team that's just so far past everybody else in that division. It's not even close. I didn't mention San Jose because I don't think they're worth mentioning. I think they've got so many
both
bad things going on. No, but I mean, like, well, I mean, if they have Wi-Fi, maybe they can't watch the show. So who knows? Maybe they won't be able to watch us in San Jose. But I just think that they've got so many question marks.
The mighty have fallen.
Yes, the mighty have fallen. And I was a guy who literally every year would pick the Sharks to be either a Stanley Cup finalist or a winner. So I had a lot of faith in the Sharks for a number of years, but I just don't think that they've got enough to get it done anymore. And so you've got a Vegas team that's clearly elevated by everyone else. You've got an Edmonton team that I think is going to be the second place team. I don't think there's any, obviously everything we say is qualified by the health of the players. And then Calgary is the interesting question mark, right? They've got an excellent goaltender in Markstrom. They've got some, good forwards that know, Matthew Tkachuk talked about how they need to get off to a better start. And then I don't remember which of the Flames writers detailed it, but it was like in each of the seasons that the Flames have played with Matthew Tkachuk in the lineup, like they've been just terrible out of the gate. And we talk about how important it is to build up, kind of fatten up in the early part of the season so you can handle any adverse things that happen through the course of the middle part or the latter part of the year. And Calgary's kind of fallen off the cliff when it comes to having good starts. So Calgary's that kind of maybe most likely third place team for me, at least in the Pacific. But yeah, I've got Vegas, I've got Edmonton. And then right now for my third, which would be my last team for my prediction, I would go with Calgary.
As I'll get you in here on Calgary, I look at the Flames and again, very similar roster to what they had last year. They throw the desperate Hail Mary and bring back Daryl Sutter as the head coach, which I still don't think was an advisable move at this point in his coaching career at this point. There's just, to me, Calgary doesn't have good vibes around it. Now, does that translate into into a lack of success this season? Not necessarily, but there's just so much sort of clouds around that Flames organization right now that I think that they are a better team on paper than they will actually perform on the ice. And I think that speaks to your point there, Dave, about their poor starts to the season. I know you bring in a guy like Blake Coleman, and you bring in Blake Coleman really for, he's effective, of course, on the ice, but you also bring him in to sort of shore up that leadership, I think, a little bit more after he gets the couple cups in Tampa Bay. But a lot about the Flames that I just don't like. There's a vibe about them that I can't necessarily articulate or put my finger on, but something about the Flames with, Johnny Gaudreau at the end of his contract after this year and just still upheaval, I think, around that team, Ezzy.
Yeah, I don't think it's a mystery. I think you just mentioned it, Drew. Like, I think maybe why you don't love the vibe is what you just said with Johnny Gaudreau, right? Being in the last season of his contract. And for how many years has Johnny Gaudreau been the face of this franchise along with Sean Monahan and Mark Giordano, who's obviously on the Kraken now, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably why, because you wonder, if the Flames struggle out of the gate or if, they're out of a playoff spot come, January, February, is a guy like Gaudreau going to be moved? And I think, those questions are valid. I do think Calgary is in contention here. And going back to what Dave said, I think, we all agree Vegas, Edmonton, those are going to be, two teams that make it out of this division. I do, and again, it's fun time, guys. We're doing predictions. I have no confidence in my predictions. I do think the Seattle Kraken are going to make the playoffs. And, one of the main reasons why is because of goaltending and defense, right? Like, I don't think any of us saw, the Kraken, acquiring Philip Grubauer. We kind of thought Chris Drieger from Winnipeg was going to be their starting goalie based on who they selected in the expansion draft. But, you look at that top four, which is most likely going to be Mark Giordano, Adam Larson, Jamie Oleksiak, and Vince Dunn. I guess, I'm not sure what the pairings have been, but you've got Hayden Fleury and Carson Soucy. I kind of, thought that they would be your third pair there. But, that's a really good group of defensemen. We talked about the goaltending. You've got a good starting goaltender, a good backup goalie. And, yeah, I mean, the Kraken really don't have a number one line. You've essentially got, two or three second lines on the Kraken, but you've got enough talent there you know, that can put the puck in the net, right? Like you look at guys like Jaden Schwartz and Jordan Eberle and guys like Brandon Tanev and Mason Appleton. Those are going to be kind of your sandpaper guys in the third and fourth line. They're definitely weak up the middle, right? Like your number one center is who? Jared McCann right now. Like, I mean, you've got Winnipeg's Morgan Geeky, who's going to be most likely the third line center. You've got Alex Wenberg there. I mean, they're not good up the middle, but
guess Yanni who Gord, wasn't of course, very good once up the middle?
Yeah. Yeah. Yanni Gord. You're right, Drew. He'll be back soon. I mean, Yanni Gord most likely is on your top line with Eberle, I imagine. So, I mean, again, you don't have, you know, it's not like you have, you know, Rantanen, Landeskog and McKinnon, but I think Ron Francis put together a pretty decent roster. I think, you know, there's a good chance they are going to be a playoff team. I'm going to take them, but I definitely don't, you know, necessarily see them having the Vegas Golden Knights magic of 2017.
No.
You know, 2018. But look, this division is wide open. Like, why can't the Kraken make the playoffs?
Oh, that's my point. I think I have them as, I only have three teams coming out of the Pacific. And I would say, you know, I have more faith right now, for whatever reason, in the Kraken than I do the Flames. That's just the reality of the situation. I mean, Vegas is going to make it out of there. I think Edmonton is still going to make it just because McDavid and Draisaitl, you know, are so talented that they can will the entire roster into the playoffs. You know, I think the Kraken are probably going to be my third place team coming out of the Pacific Division. I don't think Vancouver is ready to bounce back just yet. They still have too many holes, I think, on their defense and too many question marks. I mean, after Hughes on their back end, I think there's more to dislike than there is necessarily to like when it comes to that. I mean, you know, Ekman-Larsson, you bring him in from Arizona, but who knows what he has left. Tyler Myers, we know what he is as a defenseman. You know, Thatcher Demko, he's going to be very good, I think, for the Canucks, so he can maybe steal them some more wins, but I don't quite have them at that level. I think the forward group, you know, maybe not the elite forward group in Seattle. The elite forward group in Vancouver is better than in Seattle, but the depth forward group, I'm not sure that it's any, you know, any better than Seattle's. And I think Seattle's going to take that final playoff spot over the Canucks, Dave. I'm not sure what the three teams you have out of the Pacific.
Well, I had Vegas, Edmonton, and Calgary.
There you go.
Vegas, I think Edmonton. Seattle's going to be. I think Seattle's going to be in the mix, but I think Calgary. I think Markstrom's just, you know, a very good goaltender. I think that he may be able to be a difference maker, but. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Calgary, I don't have a ton of faith in the Flames. I just think that, you know, if they can get it going, then perhaps they'll be able to fight for that third spot. But I think a third spot is a bit of a toss-up. I think, like you guys were just talking about, I think Seattle's very much in that mix. I think the rest of the Pacific teams, maybe not so much. The California teams, it's kind of unusual to see the California teams, you know, brought so low after so many years of them being, you know, an upper echelon teams. But
sure.
I still think right now they're in that rebuild phase for the most part.
Yeah. And Dave, I'm picking four teams, right? So I've got the Kraken and the Flames along with the Oilers and the Golden Knights. And I am one of those people that think the Kings are going to be better this year. I just don't necessarily know that translates into a playoff spot. But when you know, Drew mentioned Quentin Byfield's injured. I mean, like, you know, Philip Deneau is going to be the second line center behind Anze Kopitar. I mean, it's going to be really fun to watch a guy like, you know, Alex Turcotte. I think he's going to play the majority of the season with the Kings. Lots of really good prospects there. But I mean, that division isn't very good. And there's going to be, you know, further to Drew's point about the Edmonton Oilers, you're going to get to beat up on teams like, you know, the Anaheim Ducks and the San Jose Sharks and even the Vancouver Canucks. It's probably the worst division in the league.
As it has been for the last couple of years, and that doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. The young players really need to start coming through the system in LA and Anaheim and San Jose before things are dramatically going to change in the Pacific. Let's take another break. When we come back, Marty Biron is going to join us. We'll also talk about the Eastern Conference teams. We'll give our Stanley Cup predictions. Much more to come. It's a Saturday morning. You're with Illegal Curve. Sit back and enjoy it. We're live on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. The party continues Saturday morning with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on our YouTube channel. Another reminder, Wednesday night, the Illegal Curve post-game show returns after the Jets and the Anaheim Ducks. So be sure to tune into us here on our YouTube channel on Wednesday evening and each and every one of the Winnipeg Jets 82 regular season games. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Marty Biron, who's got a mask collection behind him, the envy of so many. many people. Marty, good to see you. How are things on this, the 9th day of October? A happy, I know you're not in Canada, but as a Canadian,
oh yeah,
still always a happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yeah, funny enough, I don't know if you guys know, but like in the province of Quebec, the Thanksgiving is not as big as it is throughout the English Canada. I would say that. Like I remember it was a day off of school, but it wasn't one of those days where we gathered together. For us, the big day of the year was New Year's Day. Like I would go to my grandma's house and it would be literally like 100 people in her basement, like tables. Like that was like our Thanksgiving, you know, like family celebration type of day. So funny because I kind of feel like I didn't grow up with a Thanksgiving. And now I've got two. I've got the Canadian and the American Thanksgiving on top of New Year's Day, so I'm all good.
I have the same way. My wife is American, Marty, so we do a big U.S. Thanksgiving blowout here as well. It's always always a good time. And it's always a good time, Marty, to talk about the upcoming season with you, only a few days away from what will hopefully be a normal as can be, 82-game season followed by a playoffs. You know, as we sit here and it's October the 9th, you know, Marty, what are you what's most exciting to you as we start this upcoming season?
Wow. Most exciting to see fans in the building in places where they did not have fans at all last year. Like we have a preseason game this afternoon here in Buffalo. It's our last preseason game before the regular season starts Thursday for us. And the two games last season that we were able to have fans in the building, we had maybe 700, 800 fans. Like it was very, very complicated, especially in our county here in Erie County in New York State. So now the building's open, right? So I can't wait to see 15,000, 16,000. It doesn't have to be 18, 19,000, 20,000 every night, but I want to see 10, 12s of thousands of fans cheering loud and being there. And it shows on TV. So number one, no more of that fake crowd noise. Number two, real fans, even if it's only, we saw it last year in the playoffs, even if it was only 2,000, it was loud, right? So I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see other teams. And I'm sure you guys are as well. Like, you know, in Winnipeg, you're kind of sick and tired of seeing the same Canadian teams over and over again, and see a little bit of the Chicago Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues and Nashville Predators for you guys. For us, it's, you know, Tampa Bay. Like Tampa Bay is a top team. We didn't get to see them last year, and we're in the same division here in Buffalo. So I'm excited for that. Most importantly is to be able to see other teams, see other players. It feels like I haven't seen, you know, like Stamkos in the building here in 2 years. And it is 2 years really when you consider it. So I'm excited for that.
You know, Marty, we want to get into, you know, some of the other teams, especially in the Eastern Conference, and you know, maybe get some of your predictions, you know, put you on the spot and ask for some Stanley Cup predictions. But, you know, we have to ask you about Carey Price, right? Because that is absolutely huge news. And, you know, we wanted to get your perspective as a former NHL goaltender and now as an analyst. You played in the league at the same time as Price. What was kind of going through your head when you saw, you know, that he was going to be entering the NHL, NHLPA player assistant program?
Well, first of all, I mean, it takes a lot of courage, and I definitely commend Carey Price and his family and his team to be able to make that decision. It's never easy. 20 years ago, and I'm saying 20 years ago was 2001, right? We're not talking 1985 here. 20 years ago, like if you, let's just say, you had an argument with your wife or girlfriend and you go to practice or you go to the game, you had to say, okay, now I got to go do my thing. Like you couldn't take it in with you. And I think a lot of players suffered from anxiety and depression and things that they couldn't speak about. They couldn't open it up. They couldn't talk about their, you know, maybe their alcohol or drug issues, like medication issues, whatever. Like you didn't speak about that. You just put it aside. You played and you dealt with it at a different time. And this to me, for Carey, you look at so many things that's happened the last few years here, and we don't know what's really like to be Carey Price. We don't know what he's dealing with, but to make that step was very courageous and brave. Now, the other side of things, and like we have to think, so this is how I see it. Like for me, mental health now in 2021
is as important as physical health. Like if somebody has a knee injury, you're like, okay, you have a knee injury, you're out, right? Like, and the team has to figure out who's going to step in, right? And so they're on the same level playing field. And I don't want to not be sensitive to what Carey's going through. But then on the other side, you got to start thinking, okay, well, what are the Montreal Canadiens going to do now? You know, if somebody has a shoulder injury, you got to think, okay, what's happening next? And so that to me is the biggest question right here. 30 days in the program, it's like somebody that says, okay, I'm out with a groin injury. It's going to be 4 to 6 weeks. Well, is it 4 to 6 weeks? Could it be 8? Could it be 12? Who knows if there's going to be setbacks? Where are you going to be in 4 weeks when you return? Are you going to be ready to play hockey, or are you going to need 2-3 weeks to go? So there's so many things around Carey Price and the Montreal Canadiens right now that, yes, number one is we all want Carey to be healthy, mind and body. That is a very courageous thing to do. Number two is, okay, where does that leave the Canadiens? Now, I didn't have the Canadiens making the playoffs this year. They've surprised me last year, 2 years ago, obviously. But so for me, with or without Carey right now, I think the Canadiens are outside the playoffs, and that's just the way it is.
You know, Marty, bringing it locally, coming back over here to Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuyck has been a goaltender. I was looking at his numbers. He's faced the most shots the last 3 years, and 4 years ago, he was in the top five. I think he was third overall for the most shots he faced. It seems like collectively, the Jets, with the improved defense, have made it their goal to limit the amount of shots he's facing. As a goaltender for like Connor Hellebuyck, what's that mindset like? What's that change like when suddenly things tighten up and you're not facing that same volume? Does that affect his game, or could that affect his game at all?
Well, I think some goalies it does, and some goalies it would. I think Connor Hellebuyck is a very, very brainy type of goaltender. He thinks the game. You see his preparation when he's on the bench, you know, doing visualization. So for me, I think that he can adjust, right? And he can say, okay, now what do I need to be at my best? If I don't get as much work in games, which I don't think there's one goalie out there that says, oh, please get me 45 shots a game and 25 scoring chance. Now, I know it feels great. And I know that Roberto Luongo made a career out of it, especially in Florida in the early going. But did that win him anything, right? And I think that's the thing. Like Connor Hellebuyck is probably saying, yes, facing all these shots, all these scoring chances, got him to be a Vezina winner, got him to be one of the top goaltender in the National Hockey League. But it hasn't won him a Stanley Cup, and that's the ultimate goal. So now I think that for me, Connor Hellebuyck can really say, hey, if I don't feel like I'm getting enough work, then practice is there for a reason. Get your shift, get your shots, get your reps, get your things done to be ready. And the other thing, too, with Hellebuyck is that for me, he's a very, very positional structure type goaltender. A goalie like Jonathan Quick, for example, when in his prime, was much more of a field goalie. I think if you go long stretch without a shot and you're Jonathan Quick, you start chasing the game, you start being antsy, you start getting yourself out of position. With Connor Hellebuyck, like, it's simple. It's get your body in the way. Don't overextend. Get your positioning right there. So I do believe that either you face a ton of shots or not, his game will be suited to still be top of the league goaltender with the better defense and maybe the better team structure. Hey, how much is
muted,
that?
Drew.
Drew, like, how much is it? Is there a fine for staying on mute? I want
there should
because
be.
There is when we do a radio show in Buffalo, we're on Zoom, and if you're on mute and you go to talk, it's $1. So I'm just saying.
Like, I will. All right, Marty, good plan.
I will send you
all $1.
Time for you to step in, Drew.
That's right. I will send you $1 in the mail, Marty. My apologies for that. You know, I was going to say that, you know, of course, goaltending is such a key factor all around the NHL, and no place is that more so the case than in Toronto, where they've overhauled their goaltending this year. You know, the Freddie Anderson experiment has finally run its course, and instead they're going to go with the combination of Peter Mrazek and Jack Campbell.
Yeah.
Do you foresee better success, especially playoff time, with those two goaltenders? Or what are your thoughts on the decisions the Leafs have made in entrusting their goaltending to Mrazek and Campbell this season?
Okay, first of all, I was always a big Freddie Anderson fan. I love the way he plays the game. I do think that playing for the Maple Leafs is not an easy thing. Number one, there's a lot of pressure. Number two, they have all these fours that are making tons of money. They want to score goals, and there's only one puck on the ice, and defensive-minded hockey is not really their strong suit. So that's that. Now, have you guys seen the Leafs video, All or Nothing, on Prime Video? Like, I'm in episode four right now. I just finished the episode where Campbell's kind of taken over and all the situation with Freddie. And now getting a good behind-the-scene look at everything, there's no doubt in my mind that the Leafs were going to move on from Freddie Anderson. I think there was a lot going on with his injury, and they felt frustrated with maybe, I don't want to say his lack of dedication, but I think they felt frustrated with him not pushing a little harder and going. And listen, every athlete deals with injury differently, and Freddie, in my opinion, is a very, very good goaltender and should have had more success in Toronto, especially in playoff time. Not his fault. But you move on from that. I don't think that the Leafs are in a better spot in net right now than they were with a healthy Freddie Anderson. But Freddie Anderson was not very healthy, and you need a healthy goaltender. You need somebody that can play and play through a season and then peak at the playoffs. And for me right now, they're going to get that internal battle between Mrazek and Campbell. I would assume Campbell will start as the starter, but it's going to go back and forth. Mrazek is not just going to roll over and just be like, okay, no big deal. Like, I'll just be the backup. No, he signed a contract there. He's going to battle for more minutes. So we could see a 41-41 split down the middle this year. But who's going to play at the end of the season, in the last month, in the last 3 weeks? Who's going to get ready for the playoffs? So playoff-wise, I don't know that they're ahead when you considered who's your goalie in playoffs, right? If you're Winnipeg Jets, you say, it's Connor Hellebuck. We're there. We know. We know who's going to be. If it's the Chicago Blackhawks, it's Marc-Andre Fleury. We know. Tampa, it's Vasilevsky. We know, right? But in Toronto, do you know? And that could linger all season long, and that could put you in a tough spot when it comes to playoffs. I think that the tandem's going to be better this year, but I still don't think they've answered who's your number one goaltender and who's the guy that you trust when you head into the playoffs, because it hasn't worked.
Marty, what did you make of Robin Lehner's comments? We were talking about it earlier, and I keep asking you about, you know, more stuff that's happening off the ice as opposed to, you know, season predictions. So I apologize, but I mean, you're very familiar with Lehner from his time in Buffalo, and he's obviously one of the best goalies in the world right now. But what was kind of your main takeaway from that? Because I personally like, you know, that he's talking about his mental health and he's talking about what's going on in the NHL, but you know, obviously, you know, that kind of, you know, caught a lot of people off guard for some of his comments on Twitter last week.
Look, I like that players are taking care of themselves. And Robin has struggled from the time he was a young kid to growing up, you know, and being in Ottawa and the concussion and coming to Buffalo and the ankle injury. And they messed that up and da 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 da. I get all of this. I don't approve of the way that he did it. Social media is a dark hole. It's simple. I mean, yes, you can go on Instagram and follow up on your buddies and whatever, and Facebook and Twitter. But when you start interacting with people that have no idea what's going on, they respond to you and then you respond back, and it becomes this dark hole. So I don't approve of how Robin Lehner went about trying to put the message out there. I think it turned out to be a negative event. I'm all for players speaking out and player engaging the NHL and the NHLPA and getting their message out there. And I think that what Robin did when he left the New York Islanders he went to Chicago and he talked about, was it Chicago before or whatnot? He talked about how the Sabres and the Islanders and Lou Lamoriello helped him get some help. That was fantastic. That was great. There's a positive message that, you know what, it's never too late to get help. And, you know, you could be a 35-year-old man, a 55-year-old woman, or a 12-year-old kid, and maybe you need help. So that was positive. That was fantastic. I didn't like how he did it last time. I didn't like how shrapnel went all over the place. And listen, I played for Alain Vigneault in juniors. I played for Alain Vigneault with the Rangers. I retired a month into my season with Alain Vigneault with the Rangers. He's a tough coach. I like tough coaches. I love Lindy Ruff. I love John Tortorella. Vigneault was not my cup of tea, but I respect what he's been able to accomplish and what he's done. And some players loved him. Just like some players did not like Torts and people did not like Lindy Ruff. I love those two. Vigneault was not my cup of tea, but still, I think that it went over the line when it started to like reach other teams, other players, and other coaches. So,
To that point, Marty, about Alain Vigneault, did you ever feel mistreated by him? Because, I mean, the accusations from Leonard were, I mean, they were sort of out of left field that he went after Vigneault only. And, I mean, did you feel mistreated by him during your time with him?
I did not feel mistreated. But I do think that some of his approach were not how I would approach things. For example, I remember juniors, right? I loved the coach I had in juniors my first year and a half. That's the reason why I played so much. I got drafted in the first round. I felt really good. That coach was tough. That coach got face-to-face with me in like just berated me, names left, right? And then I followed him in his coach's office. He put his feet on the desk. He opened himself a beer. He had a cigarette in his mouth. And we talked for 45 minutes after that, right? So I can take it. But I can also have that conversation. With Alain, I felt like I could never have that conversation. And that's just me. Maybe plenty of other people did. So I didn't mind if Alain came in and like in juniors or, and I remember after the hurdle goal, like the next day at morning skate, he came over and was like, that can't happen. That just can't happen. It embarrassed us. It embarrassed you. It embarrassed everybody. It can't happen. And I'm like, I know it can't happen. Listen, I've been around 15 years in the NHL. I know that can't happen. But I never got to be able to talk to him, right? It was like he came in, got his things, and then – but I know for a fact that lots of players love him. Lots of players likes playing with him. And that's the reason why he's had success, right? So, but for me, it didn't work. And maybe Robin is getting a message from somebody that it didn't work. But there's a million other people that it worked. You know, I'm sure if you talked about John Tortorella to Marian Gabrick, he's going to say like, no, that guy he's a dinosaur, right? Well, you talk to Vinny Prospol, who had Torts in Tampa. And then I remember Vinny Prospol getting traded to Philadelphia and he sat next to me and he goes, man, I miss Torts. And I was like, I thought you didn't like Torts. He goes, no, I hated him, but right now I miss him. Right. So there's that, right? It changes all the time. So, yeah, I think I never felt mistreated by Vigneault. I just felt like maybe I was not heard as well as, but coach is a coach. Like, he can't handle 25 players the same way all the time. So that's just the way it is.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're talking about the upcoming season. We're live on our YouTube channel, our Facebook page, and our Twitter feed.
Well, Marty, we've asked you all the tough questions, so we'll ask you about one that's happening in your backyard with the Jack Eichel situation. Where do you see this? How do you see this playing out, and right. How do you see this getting resolved? Because I feel like last time you were on, we asked you the same question, but now it's a little closer to the season. So what do you think?
Let me get my notes because I've written that speech many, many times now, so I know exactly where to go. So early in the summer, I said I didn't think Eichel was going to get traded. It was too complicated. There was three factors. One is salary cap number. At $10 million, there's not a lot of teams in a pandemic that can make that happen. Two, the return. Like, who can give up four pieces or three or four pieces, first-round picks, top prospect, and is willing to do it? And three was the injury. I didn't feel that until the injury, their surgery, or was resolved, that teams would be willing to do it. Now there's a fourth factor that comes into play, is that for the Sabres to make that deal, they would have to retain or get back about $8.5 million in salaries to be able to get above the floor. So not only is the salary cap factor for all the other teams like the Rangers and the Kings and the Ducks and whoever Minnesota is rumored to be in, well, there's a salary cap factor. Are they willing to give up the pieces? Is Eichel healthy? Not right now. And well, is $8.5 million coming back to the Sabres to be able to get above the floor. So I think it's going to still get very complicated. I know the expert. I know the Dregs and Elliott and LeBron have all said, hey, there's more movement. Yes, there's more movement because the Sabres are sharing the medical records to other teams. And Jack is getting his own MRIs, and they can see where it's going right now. But does that mean that the trade is imminent? Not in my opinion. Would Kevin Adams want that trade to happen? Yes, I'm pretty sure he wants to make it happen. He wants to move on. This has been a tough summer for Kevin Adams, and he wants to move on. But I still think that we are months away from something happening.
Well, we're not months away from the season starting, Marty, so we'll let you go on this last question.
Okay.
You know, you look at around the NHL, and from my perspective, there's sort of maybe a team or two teams in each division that are upper echelon compared to the rest of the divisions. As you sit there today, you know, who are the quote unquote best teams in the NHL from your perspective? And who do you think is the teams you're sort of keeping the closest eye on as potentially being able to dethrone the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Okay, well, Florida is the team that I'm keeping an eye on because I think the Florida Panthers are great. And goaltending is the only thing right now. Sergei Bobrovsky, do I trust him? No. And Spencer Knight, I wish they had still Chris Drieger to be able to say we have that solid, but Knight can do it. He's my pick for the Calder, by the way, because I think he's going to play a lot of games, and I think Florida is going to help him a lot. So I think in the Atlantic, it's Tampa, Florida. I actually put Toronto third, in my opinion, but that's just, you know, it could change. But I think Tampa, Florida, they're the cream of the crop. I do like Colorado, and then I put Winnipeg right behind Colorado in the Central. I've always been a big believer in the Winnipeg Jets. They've gotten better, but I mean, I was watching the game last night. I think I cringed and cried when Ehlers went into the boards because I'm like, no, like we don't want any more injuries, right? Like that's always plagued the Jets at the wrong time, like losing Scheifele last year against Montreal, and there's been some injuries along the way, Kyle Connors, whatever. And then the Bufflin incident, like leaving and whatever. There's always been something to get in the way. They have a good team this year. Like, no, don't put anything in the way. So that was tough. Other than that, I'm not sold on Vegas. Although I think they're going to be at the top of the Pacific. I think the Oilers are going to be up there as well. That's me. In the Metro, can I start at the bottom? Like yeah. New Jersey and Columbus at the bottom. But hey, I'm not sold on Pitt. I'm not sold on Washington. Now Ovechkin's hurt, and I don't know if you guys saw the injury yesterday. It looked like nothing. But if you look at the left leg, the knee went like it kind of buckled under a little bit, and it looks like nothing. But this to me could be tough losing Backstrom, and now could be losing Ovechkin. So I'm saying that in the Metropolitan, the Islanders, Carolina, and the Rangers for me are the top three teams as it stands right now.
Marty Biron covers the Buffalo Sabres for MSG. You know his work, of course, from TSN and RDS as well. He's one of our favorites and one of our best guests here on the show. Marty, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Enjoy the start of the season, and we'll do it again real soon.
Thank you. You're too kind. Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
Take care, Marty. Thanks so much. There you go, Marty Biron joining us on the program. We'll take our last break. When we come back, we'll talk about the interview with Marty. We'll give our Stanley Cup predictions as well. Stay with us. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Always a great time to catch up with Marty Biron. He always brings an interesting perspective, especially his comments, I thought, about Alain Vigneault and different coaching approaches. Always great to get strict from
not Marty's cup of tea, Drew.
Yeah, but he's got and I appreciate the honesty, but he also said that he wasn't mistreated by Alain Vigneault, so it's sort of important to get the other side of the story after Robin Lehner's tweets and comments from earlier this week, and who better to get it from than straight from the proverbial horse's mouth. Let's talk about our Eastern Conference playoff teams, guys. We heard from Marty. He gave us some great insight into some of those Eastern Conference teams. He had the Lightning, the Panthers, and the Leafs, and he liked and out of the Metropolitan Division. He liked the Islanders and the Rangers and the Hurricanes. So, Ezzy, from your perspective, how do you see the two Eastern Conference divisions shaping up this year?
Yeah, well, I'm one of those people that think, you know, whether you think that the Metropolitan Division is the best division or the second best division, I would probably lean towards it being the best division, even though the Atlantic's pretty good as well. But I mean, like, first off, the Islanders are going to make the playoffs because that's what the Islanders do. They make the playoffs every single year. And I like the Hurricanes as well. Like, we weren't really sure, you know, kind of what was happening there with the goaltending situation, but they've managed to obviously bring in two very good goaltenders. So I still think, you know, and yes, Barry Kotkaniemi is assuming going to be your, you know, second line center behind Sebastian Aho. Lots of talent there. So, I mean, the Hurricanes for me are also a playoff team. The Rangers are one of those teams that I could easily see them being a playoff team. They're obviously going to be competitive for a playoff spot, but I don't know that I'm completely sold on the Rangers. Lots of talent, but it's kind of still a mixture of a young team and a veteran team. They're going to score goals, but they're also going to give up a lot of goals, even though goaltending is good there. But so the Rangers, I'm not completely sold on them. And then, you know, you look at, you know, the teams like the Flyers and the Penguins and the Capitals, who year after year either make the playoffs or come very close to making the playoffs. I mean, I just think Pittsburgh is on a downward trajectory. So, I mean, I feel like, guys, I pick every time we do the regular season preview show, I feel like Pittsburgh is, it's not even a debate. Like, Pittsburgh is just a playoff team. This year, I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. And I'm going to go with Philadelphia, actually, as my other playoff team. I have the Capitals missing the playoffs, which is, again, a weird thing to say because they make the playoffs every single year. But I'm going to take the Flyers. I do believe Carter Hart's going to have a bounce back season. I like, you know, the Ryan Ellis acquisition. Don't like the Rasmus Ristolainen acquisition as much, but, you know, I like the move that they made trading Voracek for Cam Atkinson. You know, just a really good, you know, a deep team in Philadelphia. They didn't, you know, miss it by that much last year. So I'm going to take the Flyers. And then when you talk about the Atlantic, yeah, Drew, obviously Tampa Bay's in there. You know, Toronto, too much talent not to be a playoff team. And then, you know, Florida, you know, has to be a playoff team. I mean, the moves that they made just make them better. I really like, you know, for example, Sam Bennett, I think, you know, has really rejuvenated his career in Florida. Aaron Ekblad's healthy, you know, really solid defense. We know Mackenzie Weegar, you know, maybe isn't underrated anymore, but, you know, it's an underrated group of defensemen there. And then Barkov just signed the big deal, you know, and we know that he's the best two-way center in the entire league. So, I mean, with, you know, the same cast of characters, Jonathan Huberdeau, I mean, we know who they are. You know, the Panthers to me are absolutely going to be a playoff team. I think a team like the Boston Bruins is going to take a step back. I really do. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team this year, even though they've still probably got the best line in hockey with Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak. I look at that defense and I look at the goaltending situation, and I just don't think they're as deep as they have been in previous years. I mean, Charlie Coyle is going to get an opportunity to be the second line center there. And obviously you've still got some, you know, other talented players down the lineup like Jake DeBrusk. I don't think the Bruins guys are a contender anymore. I don't even think that they're necessarily a team that can win a round in the playoffs. So I still think they'll be competitive, but I just don't have them making. And I, same thing with Montreal, great run to the Stanley Cup final, but I mean, you've just got too many question marks there. No Shea Weber, no Carey Price. You've lost a lot of players. Philip Deneau, I think they're going to miss a lot. And again, they'll be competitive. I just don't see them as a playoff team in the Atlantic.
Give me your two Stanley Cup teams, Ezzy, and give me your Stanley Cup champion, and do it quickly, please.
Okay, this might be a little bit of a surprise, but I thought about this quite a bit preparing for the show. I've got the Colorado Avalanche and the New York Islanders in the Stanley Cup final. And I've got the Islanders winning the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row, you know, going to the conference finals. I mean, obviously the Tampa Bay Lightning were the team that they couldn't get by, but I just love the Islanders. I mean, you guys know I'm a big Lou Lamoriello fan, and just, you know, bringing in Zdeno Chara as a third pairing defenseman, you know, bringing in a guy like Zach Parise to play on your third line. I just like those moves. You know, I think Matt Barzal is going to have a big year. I think Anders Lee's going to have a big year. He's healthy. So I like the Islanders to take it all.
David, same question to you.
I like Ezzy's prediction. I'm going a little off. I'm going with the Carolina Hurricanes, I think, from the East. I have a feeling they've been knocking on the door. They have some real good young talent. And I think Carolina as a team, you know, I trust in Brind'Amour. I think he knows what it takes to get it that next level. So I think Rob the Bot is going to get his Carolina Hurricanes into the Stanley Cup finals. And I am going to go with the Winnipeg Jets.
Wow. Because, Homer.
No, not about being a homer. I think that of all the years the Jets have been positioned, this is probably the best they've ever had. in terms of, I mean, look, they're going to have holes. Every team can't be in the NHL in a cap era and not have some holes. But I'm telling you, this is from health being what it's going to be, obviously. But for right now, looking at the number, the day one roster, I think this is a Jets team that has the current roster from a forward, defensive, and goaltending perspective that is sufficient to get it done. But I also think from a depth perspective, if you need to go down to the farm, I could definitely see the Jets. Rob Mahoney's saying I'm his hero. Thank you, Rob. I appreciate that. But I'm serious. I'm not a homer. I mean, I'll call it when the Jets are the moose, they're not playing well. I'm not afraid to say that they're not playing well. But I think if you're looking at it from, look what happened to Colorado, right? You've got Francouz out 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, and look, obviously that can happen here in Winnipeg, and you know, then it's going to be the Eric Comrie show. So it's definitely a factor for teams that rely on a goaltender the way these teams do. But if Connor Hellebuyck stays healthy, I think the Jets can, you know, match up well against Colorado. I think it'd be a tough situation, but I think that you can definitely see Winnipeg coming out with it. So yeah, I think if the Winnipeg Jets are ever been positioned to be a Stanley Cup team, it's this year. Now, do the Jets make the Stanley Cup and win the Stanley Cup? I'm going with the Jets. I'm going to give it to the Jets. I'm going to go Winnipeg over Carolina.
And I will round it out. I'm going to say it's going to be a Vegas, Florida Stanley Cup final. And the Golden Knights will finally, after coming so close so many times in their early existence, will raise Lord Stanley's Cup at the end of the year. It'll be an
interesting season. Going with the Tampa three-peat.
Nobody's going with the Tampa three-peat. That's true. We'll see if we're right or if we're wrong. It all starts for the Winnipeg Jets on Wednesday night. We'll see you back here Wednesday following the Jets and the Ducks. It'll be the Illegal Curve post-game show live here on our YouTube channel. Tell your friends so that they can tune in and they don't miss a minute of it as well. Big thank you to Jeff Hamilton. Big thank you to Marty Biron for joining us. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends at Seagram's. Support these fine businesses because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thank you to all of you for joining us in the chat this morning. Another great day in the chat. Love the interaction. Dave Manuk is on the top right. Ezra Ginsberg is in the bottom middle. I am your host, Drew Mandel. From our Illegal Curve family to all of you and your family, a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you Wednesday night for the Illegal Curve post game show live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.